Thanks, Maxine. So I want to give kind of a mixed research outreach talk. We were debating what session to put this in, and I think it would have fallen on deaf ears in the outreach session. I think this is a much more appropriate audience for this. What I want to talk about is this framework called Soil Kitchen that myself and my collaborator, Jane Willenbring, at the University of Pennsylvania have been using for community engagement and developing citizen science research initiatives. This is not our idea, Soil Kitchen. In fact, we stole it with permission. And it's an open source idea. It's a way to generate outreach opportunities for those of us who may be interested in the urban soil resource. So the main concept behind Soil Kitchen, and I'll explain why it's called Soil Kitchen, is on-site soil screening. That's the first piece of it. That's the main piece of it. Supported by academic or agency personnel. So a major piece of this has been lead screening, because that's something that a lot of community members are interested in. So there needs to be some input of equipment from academic or agency personnel. But community partnerships are the key. So we do these events in partnership with community organizations, events that are already going on in the community that are drawing in people. And soil screening occurs at the events. Predominantly lead has been of major interest, but also if you have a portable XRF there, arsenic and cadmium if you got it calibrated. Soil texture, we all know that doing soil texture by feel with kids is probably the best way to do soils outreach and make parents mad. So soil screening for texture can be a good way to do this as well, and pH and many other properties depending on the groups that are doing this and what their interests are. Citizen science is another key foundational point. So citizens bring samples. They self-report locations and some information about those samples. So it's kind of crowdsourcing samples. And we don't restrict the samples. We don't tell people, give them basic sampling guidelines, but sample what you're interested in for you, right? So what you're interested in on your property or for whatever purpose. And we build databases. So all the results and the associated information are added to a living database that grows year by year. And one of the other really great components of this is that we can identify directly from the end users of this information what are their requirements, what do they want to know about their soils, and specifically with regard to lead or different distributions of soil constituents. So this can complement other research efforts and, in fact, help write proposals if there's some community engagement involved. And lastly, we want to highlight and educate urban soils as an important resource. So probably everybody in this room thinks about urban soil management very carefully. I would probably argue that most people outside of this room don't, and the urban soil resource is probably invisible to a lot of people. So this is an important engagement opportunity. Soil Kitchen is open source. We don't own it. We, in fact, are building a national network of people who are interested in using the name in their cities for whatever purpose. It's a flexible, adaptable framework. And in practice, what it looks like is we have an assembly line. Again, depending on what properties we're screening for, usually these are volunteers, undergraduate, graduate students, sometimes community members, and people come. They bring their soil sample, they get received, they're assigned a number, goes through the assembly line, they come back 15 to 20 minutes later and they get some screening results and interpretation from faculty member or grad student. So it's a great opportunity as well for grad students or even undergrads to interact directly with the public and talk to them about soils. So that's one really great piece of this. Why is it called Soil Kitchen? Well, here's the origins. Soil Kitchen originally was an event in 2011 put on by an art collaborative out of San Francisco called Future Farmers, and they did this in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I'm not sure why they were based in San Francisco and did this in Philadelphia, but that's what happened. And what they did was they took an abandoned building, this is by the Don Quixote Monument in Philadelphia, and they did an art installation, construction, and they held 5 days of these events that were open to the community. So people would come in, exchange a bag of soil for soup, and they'd sit around while their soil was screened. There was educational programming and some interpretation of the screening results. So this was kind of how it started. It was widely popular. There were hundreds of people that attended and a lot of different workshops, artists and scientists involved. So again, citizen science. So self-reported information, large amount of samples coming in, all self-reported. And one way that they've done this at the beginning, and I think we continue to do this, is we just give people a number and a PIN on a map, and so they don't necessarily have to feel like their privacy is being invaded by giving an address. But we can, that way, at least very coarsely geo-reference these samples to block, certainly. And again, on-site screening. So this is from the original event in 2011 with Future Farmers. They're doing from some very simple textural screening with sedimentation and some kind of soils education. The EPA brought their mobile soil testing lab to this event, and that's in the upper right-hand corner. So they had a PXRF that they're using to screen for lead. And since then, it's evolved. So really, under the watchful eye of Jane at the University of Pennsylvania over the last 4 years, she's continued these events, and it's changed because of that. Both Jane and myself, we don't have extension appointments, so we're research. And so it's changed into really focusing on a research-based model that's grounded in community engagement and citizen science. And I think we can apply that and be very flexible with different people's interests. There's also been an intensified focus just on lead. Originally, there was some screening for a lot of other soil properties. In Philadelphia, Jane found that was the main property that people were interested in. I'm sure most of you are familiar with these guidelines, but just to put a couple numbers in context later, the EPA guidelines for bare soil in children's play areas is 400 parts per million, and in other areas is 1,200 parts per million. Interestingly, in Minnesota, we actually have a 100 parts per million guideline, and that's actually in statute. So we tend to have been more aggressive in our guidelines. And just one note, sometimes people say, well, you know, we know enough about lead distributions in some cases, but I found this really interesting quote from the great Dr. Mielke, and he said, it's amazing how little mapping is taking place. If we had a map of every city, we'd have a vision of what needs to be done. And this is coming from a gentleman who's done decades and decades of work on soil lead distribution. So there really is more work to do and a lot more data to collect and get out there and engage. I didn't put this up here to read any of these to you, but in Philadelphia, there was a number of partnerships that have grown. Agency partners, CDC, municipal partners, a whole slew of nonprofit partners, academics, the UPenn Center of Excellence in Environmental Toxicology, and community partners. So you can see that this list continues to grow, and there's a lot of public interest. So over those 4 years, over 1,000 soil samples were screened, and remember, each of these soil samples is associated with a direct public contact, right? So with either a faculty member or a grad student, and so that's an important piece of this. The mean lead was about 524 parts per million, so above that EPA threshold on mean. So we can see the importance of this legacy, right? And so we're still kind of dealing with this. In Philadelphia, the emerging research activities that have come out of this is Jane, and in collaboration with other municipal and clinical partners, has started to use this database to better identify and constrain hotspots of soil lead in association with childhood blood lead. So this isn't new, it's been done before, but we now have 1,000 more samples that can feed into that data. And last spring, we started Soil Kitchen here in the Twin Cities, so now it's a franchise, so this is Soil Kitchen Twin Cities, in addition to Soil Kitchen Philadelphia. It's a free franchise, you don't have to buy into it, it's free. And we did two events, one in Minneapolis and one in St. Paul. 200 plus community contacts and samples were screened in about 8 hours of work, so it was about 4 hours per event. That's one advantage to a researcher for these, because you just stay in one spot and you get a lot of samples coming into you. And granted, again, this is citizen science, so we're not constraining a lot of the random variation, but if we can do 1,000 samples, 2,000 samples over time, we're going to learn a lot. Partners here, St. Paul Ramsey County Food and Nutrition Commission, Gardening Matters, Frogtown Farms, those are both nonprofit and community organizations centered around urban ag. And there's a network of people that are focused on lead education and assessment that have been very supportive of these events. So emerging research activities from these events here. So we're very fortunate in the Twin Cities because Dr. Maoki did a lot of work here in the Twin Cities. This map is actually from 1989. I think there was 500 to 1,000 samples that were systematically taken that he used to create this lead map of Healthside soil dust in the Twin Cities. And he also did another study in 1999 with another 1,000 samples from St. Paul. So we have a very good idea of what the lead distributions are in a broad sense in the Twin Cities metro area. But one thing that's really emerged from these contacts is three really important end user information demands. So people want to know a lot more about property scale distributions and can we predict them. So we know something about the broad distribution, but if my house is, you know, in the metro scale, what does that mean for, especially in an age where urban agriculture is expanding, people are looking at putting in gardens, expanding gardens, using the soil resource. People want to know something about property scale distributions. Depth distributions, that's another big one. So again, with urban agriculture, more interest in, instead of just the public health aspect, has typically been the top 10 centimeters or less, because that's the main risk for dust. But now, with people really interested in gardening, there's a lot more interest in, what's the depth distribution of these things? And can we build predictive models off of this data and really make this information widely accessible? And that was another major comment. This map, for example, from Dr. Maoki, is in the gray literature in a University of Minnesota publication. It took me a week to dig it up. And so certainly a member of the general public is not going to be able to get their hands on it very easily. So how can we make this information more accessible? So we've been doing a lot of screening on property scales with portable XRF. I'm sure many of you have done similar things. Looking at gradients, this is a well-established gradient on properties. So on the y-axis here is the soil lead PXRF value in parts per million. And on the x-axis is a distance from a building or household. I know the Baltimore group has shown similar patterns and constrained those. Looked at actually trying to build predictive models at the property scale. So I think there's some interesting questions here. When we build our predictive models, are they the same? Do we see similar trends in the Twin Cities that are, or are they different from Baltimore trends, and can we predict these across cities at this scale? Depth distributions has been interesting. We've just started kind of looking at this work, but we're looking at very fine scale depth distributions with the PXRF along these transects. And you know, we're finding lead a lot deeper than most people think. I'm sure many of you again have seen this in your research, but it has implications for people who want to use these soils in different ways. So we're going to massively expand those efforts over the next year or two, collect a lot of property scale lead information, and try to build predictive models, and hopefully develop a phone app so that people have some kind of information accessibility, whether it's a property owner or a community group that's trying to educate people, make this information accessible, and make this a living kind of information database so that we can update predictive models and people can feel like they have a buy-in when they're contributing data to this. So Soil Kitchen is a growing national network. It's free. Started with Philadelphia, Twin Cities, and I believe as of next year we may have three other collaborators: Soil Kitchen New Orleans, Karen Johansson at Tulane, Keith Pizzoli in San Diego, UC San Diego, and in Oakland, Ron Amundsen, who some of you may know at UC Berkeley. So we encourage you to adapt the Soil Kitchen model in your community. It's flexible. It's whatever you want it to be. But we want to kind of have this group of researchers who may use this model so that we can share resources, maybe include joint statements of broader impact and proposals and things like that. Feel free, please, to contact myself or Jane if you have any questions. We certainly have a lot of materials from the work that we've done. Thank you, and I don't know if we have time for questions.
Oh, yes, we do.
Okay.
We do have time for questions.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Nick, from your XRF screening, if you return a value that was, you know, 1,500 parts per million, what did you tell the homeowner?
Right. So two things there. So the one is those are field PXRF values. So we're calibrating our specific instrument. You know, that's something, I haven't looked at enough of this data, I'll be honest with you, yet, to make a good interpretation on that. I mean, my thought was that that was an indication of major anthropogenic disturbance that had taken something down there. The other distributions that we saw that were very flat, and maybe some of you have seen this, where instead of decreasing with depth, at least in the top 30 or 40 centimeters, they're very flat. There's a lot of worm castings at the surface in these urban soils, and so I think there's a lot of bioturbation going on that's been redistributing this lead, and again, I'm sure many of you have done this work. But that's an important consideration for use, right? So if somebody's not going to do a raised bed, where is the lead, and should I be concerned, you know, at a certain depth? And so these are questions I think, I'm a podologist, I should be honest. So I think about depth distributions, and so those are questions that are very interesting to me, but this is a new environment for me to make those interpretations. So I would be open to other interpretations as well.
Now we've got lots of questions. Let's have just one more, and then we can continue it at the break. Go ahead. Stephanie, go ahead.
There's going to be a new soil kitchen in Camden, New Jersey. I just met last week with our local NRCS to plan one right across from Philadelphia, actually, right across the river. So we were talking about what we're going to do. Related to that question is that we have materials from Rutgers University and other sources that we would share with the clients that are bringing the samples. And also they're going to have people from PBC there to interact with the public about what the lead level means to them. And for example, suggest that their children have blood lead tests to find out if they're high, and then advise them on ways to minimize the impact in those cases.
That's great. So is it going to be called Soil Kitchen Dash? Okay. Either way, it's fine. It's good.
But I did have a question too. So what kind of instructions do you give people about how to take those samples? Do you tell them that you want different depth? Do you tell them how far away from the building to take their sample, or they just bring in one sample?
We've got a cartoon of suggested of suggested protocols, which are kind of these very general soil sampling protocols, but at the same time, we want people to get information about something they want. So we don't want to constrain, we want to give general guidelines, but we don't want to constrain what people are doing and the information they're getting. So we actually have a cartoon that we can share, and it's very general, but it helps them at least kind of think about what they're going to do. And we do have depth suggestions. I would add too that we are looking at bringing the Minnesota Department of Health sponsors a van here that does mobile lead testing on hair for adults and children. And so they're actually going to partner with us this spring, we're looking at, so that when people come in and they've got, you know, three or four samples that are all well above guideline thresholds, they can go over on site and also get at least a screen on their blood lead level. So I think that's a next step that we can take this, because I certainly can't provide that service. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.